When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
In September 2020, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is supporting The Roots of Music. The Roots of Music empowers the youth of New Orleans through music education, academic support, and mentorship, while preserving and promoting the unique musical and cultural heritage of the city.
This month, we're donating 10% of Mastis revenue to The Roots of Music. For more about what they do and how you can help, check them out at therootsofmusic.org. If you'd like to participate in our sponsorship of music-related organizations, become a Mastis patron at patreon.com/mastis.
Thanks for listening. Oh, those funky horns. I love them so. I have a good romance with those horns. I am your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here, as always, with the plain old spectacular Mark Blankenship. Hello, Mark.
Hello. I'm wearing giant monster boots.
Made of pork. Just kidding. Welcome to episode 203. I still can't believe it. Of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Mark, you have brought us today's topic. Tell us more.
All right. Today I have brought to the table Lady Gaga's 2009 hit Bad Romance, which was in the beginning of the second wave of Gaga-ness that the culture metabolized. It was the it was the first single from The Fame Monster, which was the EP that followed up The Fame. So The Fame was the one that gave us Just Dance, Poker Face, Love Game, Paparazzi, and then bang, here comes Bad Romance. And this is a song that I very much wanted to talk about because we have talked about Lady Gaga before, Sarah, in the Oscars episode where we talked about her Star Is Born song versus Barbara's Star Is Born song. And I feel like that at this point, Lady Gaga has been around as a musical presence for like 12 years, which I can't believe that it's already been 12 years. But
yes, God, I know.
But it is very clear that Lady Gaga is here to stay. It is very clear that she is exceptionally skilled. And really one of those, I think, guaranteed for the Hall of Fame musicians of recent times.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like one of the things that is so interesting about Lady Gaga is that she proves herself over and over again to be a master musical mimic. Like on the Star Is Born soundtrack, she really is able to put on the drag of sort of country musician for some of those songs. And then she puts on the drag of pop star. And I think I'm actually remembering, I may have made this exact point about her during the Star Is Born episode. And on her brilliant song, Edge of Glory, she gives us the vibe of 80s Pat Benatar style rock. On her new album, Chromatica, she's giving us the hyper-caffeinated version of the Max Martin-style pop that's zipping around, been zipping around the world for a long time. But I think that on Bad Romance, and this is the argument I want to explore after we hear the clip, Lady Gaga actually sounds only like Lady Gaga. And to me, Bad Romance is the one song that best encapsulates the things that Lady Gaga does when, to my mind, she is being unlike anyone else. And that's one of the reasons I find this song so very exciting. But before we dig into all of that, let's hear a clip. Passion, baby, working, I'm a freak, baby.
love, and I want your revenge. I want your love, I don't wanna be friends. Je veux ton amour, et je veux ton revanche. Je veux ton amour, I don't wanna be friends.
I'm so excited that you clipped this exact part.
Ooh, tell me more.
This is, I think, if you had to explain to someone from outer space or who had been in a coma since 2007 or whatever, like, what, like, boil it down for me. Why do we care about this artist? This is Lady Gaga in 1 minute in this sense.
Yep.
There is this, like, the song begins as this, like, danceable battle cry. And as you move into the section that we just heard, you begin to see this, like, elementally Germanotti thing, which is the extremely brightly and heavily defended creature, like, that wall or that armor cracks. And you see this, you know, fierce but tiny warrior, and then you actually hear, like, this is a person. Like, this is not a war machine. This is a person. And there is that, like, I've made this comparison pretty recently on the podcast. I think that, like, Thelma Houston, like, the rage and the pain make the disco song more danceable and not less.
Yes.
And that is sort of Gaga's great gift, is that she takes whatever genre or style she's in and puts it around her as an armored defense, but then you're still able to see and hear her inside, like a kind of Wizard of Oz thing, I guess, in the end. And I think that is her great, I mean, her voice is stunning and beautiful and powerful, but that there's this, like, reflecting line of mirrors that she uses it to create around her in terms of image, in terms of protection. And that she can get all of that into almost all of her song craft is really something. And also the song is just good at the same time.
God,
so, and
yeah.
I think maybe having watched that documentary about her, which was, like, pretty good, not great, but that sense of this, you know, human person with human frailties, who is, like, brought into our company by this unbelievably powerful voice. Like, I talked in the Oscars episode about that moment in that song where, like, you can hear the air around her ionizing.
Yes.
Because you're about to be fired out of the cannon of her voice. Is like, I mean, it's just amazing to listen to, but then its ability to become its own metaphor is, I don't know, for a, like, someone who majored in the analysis of literature, it's really something that, it, you know, it's its own synecdoche somehow. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but that clip was a perfect distillation of what makes her a great vocalist and a great artist and a fascinating personage as well.
I could reach through this microphone and give you a big kiss on the cheek. This is why our pod marriage works, because you have really articulated some of the things that I have been thinking as well. And I just want to say how much I agree with you, that one of the things that I love about her is that she is constantly putting on these personae. When I said that at the beginning about Lady Gaga is often putting on this various musical drags, I did not mean that as a, that was not an insult. That was actually a high compliment, because you're so right that what I find thrilling about her is that she puts on all of these different musical identities. And then inevitably, when it's really working, she cracks them open and shows you the raw emotion that she is so good at communicating. And it's like the story she keeps telling us over and over and over again is, look, in this country song, in this dance song, in this rock song, in this pop song about asses, there is actually the seed of something very vulnerable, and I will show it to you. Get fucking ready. And it makes me think about her, the song on the Star Is Born soundtrack, Is That All Right? Which is just like, I don't know if you know that one, but she's like, nothing you say wouldn't interest me. And it's just her and a piano.
Yeah.
And it would seem like that would be Lady Gaga just being vulnerable. But what she also has this capacity to do is make the most extra melodramatic gestures, so that sometimes the drama of the performance is the shell that she's in. And then in the song, Is That All Right? She breaks that shell open by letting her voice crack in this really high little sob. And you're like, fuck, I thought she was just doing a simple acoustic song. No, she was building another persona that she could then break apart. And the way you phrase that really helps me see that so clearly across her entire career thus far. So thank you for that.
Well, and the use of the word drag is advised, and I think intentional on her part as well. I just keep coming back to her Super Bowl performance, and I often do when I'm thinking about her, even when I'm just like, whatever, hearing Poker Face or someone mentions the meat dress or whatever, that it's like, that was such a Trojan horse of a like cultural moment, that this is the like most aggressively hyper-masculine, fucked up, shared cultural event of the year, basically. That there's like all this violence, but there's also all of this exclusion. And that it's, you know, there's this plantation system that feeds into the NFL and most pro sports, let's face it. And then she is this very outre, open ally, basically wearing a disco ball with like football pads over it. And that this person is performing at the Super Bowl, this like tiny woman, and her, like, that her drag is so much a part of her art, and that she would be doing it at the Super Bowl, which is like so intolerant of everything except jorts wearing MAGA masculinity, is I just remember feeling almost like there were tears in my eyes almost at what a I don't know what the word is, like what a welcome intrusion from my world into that world it was to see this. And I mean, again, she's bitty, she's so little, but I have no qualms about thinking that she could kick my ass or anyone's, honestly. Even with chronic pain, she'd just be like, come here, I want to tell you something. Stomp. Like, good. So let's take a quick break from talking about Lady Gaga to talk about sort of one of Lady Gaga's progenitor groups, the B-52s, and specifically a video as requested by George. Mark, can you tell us more?
Yes, George, our listener, contacted us and asked us if we would be willing to do an analysis of their music video for Deadbeat Club. And we thought that was a great idea. And I also just want to read to you a little bit of George's reasoning. He says, Deadbeat Club is part of a genre of music video for me that I'm calling pandemic escapism. Basically, it's a music video of things that before 2020 weren't spectacular, but now are like, I want to go to their Liz Lemon GIF, which he writes out in actual words, which amuses
me. I love that.
He says that the reason why he thinks Deadbeat Club is the best example of pandemic escapism is that the song itself has that 2020 vibe, best exemplified by the opening line, "What? Get a job? What for? I'm trying to think." The feeling with the retro black and white music video of people looking fabulous at awesome parties, listening to music, dancing close to someone, having a conversation, and just being social is exactly what anyone that has been cooped up for almost 6 months needs. And I'd say George is hitting the nail right on the head with that one, Sarah.
I think that's so true. But I also think, and I have always thought that, first of all, I love this song. And I've always loved this song, and it has been stuck in my head for days now. And I love to sing it to the cats, and they do the "what for? I'm trying to think" parts.
Of course, yes.
Get a job. I love the song, but I've also always thought that the video doesn't quite match up with the mood, the experiential mood of listening to the song and what I have always felt the song is kind of about, which is this, if I may.
Okay, please do.
The Deadbeat Club speaks very strongly to me, and this could totally be me projecting, speaks very strongly to me of that almost performative, outsidery community that some kids form, theater kids, lit mag kids, of being
I feel very attacked right now, Sarah.
you shouldn't. I think this is a natural part of growing up and feeling like your milieu doesn't really, you don't belong to each other, you and where you grew up and who you grew up around mostly. So when you find your people, when you find your own Deadbeat Club, there is sincere community in it, but there's also a lot of performative, oh my God, we're such weirdos, just being super loud in the middle of the mall and being annoying, but also feeling finally my people with whom I can be an annoying adolescent. Mm-hmm. So there is an extreme compassion for and fondness for that feeling, I think, throughout the B-52's work, this high tolerance of the high volume of the alienated theater / lit mag child. But usually it's much more bright and fun. And this particular track is a little more contemplative, I guess. But then the video is just all the aspirational aspects of this song and this feeling of community of old or of yore, and none of the a little bit not sadness, but I don't know, just being very on in order to keep feelings of social fear at bay. I could be reading way too much into this, but that's always been my feeling about the video, which is still extremely enjoyable to watch but doesn't necessarily track with what you're expecting from the song as a narrative.
Well, before we move on, let's listen to a little clip of the song Deadbeat Club so we can orient ourselves.
Yes, let us. I mean, it's fun, but it's not totally happy. There is that feeling of I'm waiting for my real life to start. And I think I listened to the B-52s less once I went to college and felt like I was with less of a forced group of deadbeat clubbers. Nothing against my running mates in high school, but anyway.
Okay, well, I had the Cosmic Thing tape in 89, 90, somewhere. Mm-hmm. There was definitely a Columbia House purchase. Mm-hmm. And Cosmic Thing, of course, is the album that this song is on. But I was too young at that time to really listen to anything that wasn't Rome or Love Shack. I was 11 years old, so I wasn't really someone who was going to dig deep into the rest of the tape. It just wasn't how I was at the time.
No.
So the only thing I remembered about this song until I started preparing for this episode was Fred Schneider going, "Dead Beat Club." And he's hard to forget, Fred Schneider.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
So I came to this song at 41, really, because it was like in the last few hours, really, that I really was listening to it closely. And I've listened to it like 6 times and can't get enough of it. And yeah. I am having a very different interpretation of what the song and video are doing. Huh. I think that you are absolutely right that it's about being with that group of weirdos that makes you feel safe and that also you're performing with.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. I mean, that's like so perfectly said. But I see the song as being a wistful, nostalgic reflection on that.
Oh, I think that's true also.
But I think then that is why the video, which is shot in sepia and really is just featuring the current members of the B-52s and like Michael Stipe is in there looking very hot in his 91 way. I think that this video is a celebration of the things about that group of people that doesn't need performativity. I think this is a group of artists remembering what it was like when they were young artists together. You know, they're talking about an Athens restaurant where they would go get quarter beers and listen to Question Mark and the Mysterians. But I think this to me is like, we are feeling generous enough to our younger selves to excise all of the performative fear and just celebrate the nostalgia not the nostalgia, but have nostalgia for the like best parts of those times. And to me, that's where the like wistfulness comes in, is because they're old enough to know that those days are gone. And for instance, I find it shocking to realize that Kate Pearson was 41 when she recorded this music video.
Oh my God.
And they all were in their mid to late 30s or early 40s. So I think it's because I am 41 listening to it now, and I'm like, I cannot fucking believe that I am Kate Pearson's age in this video. What? It's really hard for me to accept. But so I feel that to my eye and ear, the video perfectly encapsulates what I think the song is going for. But, you know, agree to disagree.
Well, I think that it takes, I think you're right that it does that, and it leaves only the aspirational parts. And because so much of the B-52s is like this, you know, retro feeling in their presentation. But like, you know, Let's Dance in the Garden in Torn Sheets in the Rain, like, you know.
But that's like. But-
yeah, like that's exactly what you, when I was listening to this tape, when it came out, I was 16, and this is exactly the kind of performatively wacky thing that you would think to do and that you would think to sing about. And again, like I'm not judging my old self or the B-52's old selves. It's just an interesting choice that they went completely with the positive, nostalgic aspects of the song and of their past. It's neat.
Yes. So, and again, to me, interesting and grade A. To you, interesting, perhaps grade B minus.
Oh, well, but, I mean, the song is like a plus, even at your school. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, shit. Never let it go. That's right. Thank you for carrying the torch of my anger on that.
It is legitimate, and I carry it on your behalf cheerfully.
Well, so I know, but I think we both agree that the song is an A plus.
Oh, yeah, and honestly, for sure. Thank you, George, for having us revisit it. It's really been, it's like a perfect song for the week that I happen to be having. So thanks.
And I would say, seriously, George, thank you, because if it weren't for this request, I would never have listened to this song ever. It's possible I never would have heard it again. And I'm like, I could have been enjoying this song for decades. I'm glad I finally got there. And it's like, 11-year-old Mark with the tape, what were you thinking? Why didn't you pay more attention? Anyway.
You were 11. I also, forgive yourself.
I was 11. It's fine. I also do want to add that if you would like us to discuss a music video on this here program, just shoot us an email at talkaboutsongs@gmail.com, and we'll let you know how to make that happen.
And I'm pretty sure that that's a part of certain levels of Patreon involvement. Is that not so?
That is true. I guess I could have been clearer about that. George got this video request because of his Patreon level on Patreon. But, you know, there are many ways to get us to talk about a music video, but the easiest way is to become a patron at George's level.
It's true.
And, you know, there have been a lot of comparisons between Madonna and Lady Gaga, and I think you've just touched on one of the reasons that those comparisons are apt, because Madonna's Super Bowl performance was also just this swirl of outre feminine power. And, mm-hmm. it was just, and Lady Gaga did it in her way, too, and it's just, like, really nice when those things can happen. And I think also, as is true with Madonna, all of Lady Gaga's posturing and identity and performance of identity would be moot if the songs were not also good. And Bad Romance yeah. is a fucking baller banger A+ song. And the reason, in fact, that I clipped this section is for me, I just love that she goes into French for a few bars.
Yeah.
Like, why the fuck not?
Well, if it is good enough for the Belinda Carlisle,
yeah,
it is
oui,
good
oui.
enough for moi.
Oué, Belinda. She's right over there.
Oué, ou. Oué, Belinda.
Oué, Belinda. Belinda. It's so true. You know, Lady Gaga is able to do all of these things, these very brilliant multi-level things about performance, but then she's also able to sing nonsense syllables and French and make you be like, yep, that's my shit. And I think mm-hmm. the reason that for me this song really stands out as the most Lady Gaga hit of all is because I cannot imagine another pop star doing this. I can imagine another pop star making a song like Shallow or Marry the Night or even honestly Just Dance. But like Poker
or
Face.
Poker Face. Like Poker Face is, I think I like it a little bit more than I like this one, but I think this one is much more her, whereas Poker Face is a little more Madonna, actually.
Yeah, it's like Poker Face is Lady Gaga ramping up to a completely singular artistic statement. And again, I want to say, the singularity of Gaga's artistry, as we keep saying, is the way that she inhabits these personae. But then on a song like this, it's like, I'm going to show you all of that warrior spirit and that vulnerability in a musical container that doesn't sound like anybody else's musical container. And like, this song has so many sections, it has so many parts, it has so many different elements. Like, there's the French and the chanting and the big belted notes and then all of those stacked vocals. And I think it's also really important to note that she wrote this song alone. Well, I'm sorry. She wrote the song with just one other collaborator, a guy who goes by the name of Red One. So it was really just her and this one other person. And I think that they've just built this statement for her here that, like you said, in 65 seconds, that one clip encapsulates all of the shit that she's up to. And I don't know, Sarah, how well you know or if you've seen the video for this song.
I don't know it.
Oh, shit. You really can treat yourself to the video. It is the visual that explains Lady Gaga better than anyone else. I will just say this. There is a scene in the video where she is walking in slow motion with a cape that is made out of a bear skin, and the head of the bear is dragging behind her, and she's walking slowly toward a bed that's on fire.
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
I think that she's also so intelligent and in control of the imagery and when the, like, how high up the walls are and how thick they are. And like, even her name, like Lady Gaga, has so much in it.
Yes.
And I was thinking about that. And then I was also thinking, like, the first sort of, like, there's a gazillion associations with Lady, but also with Gaga, which is like nonsense baby talk. But then my first thought is always about Radio Gaga.
I think that that's actually, I think that song is what inspired her name, if I'm not mistaken.
But think about, I mean, I think probably at least once a week about how the world is just a shittier place without Freddie Mercury in it. Mm-hmm. And I have thought that on a semi, like, you know, I might as well have a calendar, like, setting for it, that it's like, just a reminder, we're without Freddie. Buck up, everybody. But I think about that so frequently. And as we're talking about this, I think about how similar Freddie and Queen's whole like Trojan horse, like we are these arena rockers, but like what we're actually doing that you claim not to get is actually the point.
Yes.
And he also had this, there was also this like defense that he had with this band and this persona, and like I have satin wings on this jumpsuit that's cut down to the treasure trail, and you know, who will fight me? But then that voice, that life, like, I don't know, just what a hero of culture I have always thought. And as I said, we are poorer without him. But on the minor plus side, if he were alive, they absolutely would have collaborated, and it would have been like literally a psychological nuclear bomb that would have devastated everyone, and there would have been no point in continuing with pop music or even talking.
It's true. Yeah, you're right. I guess that's like, the silver lining.
We wouldn't have deserved it, and we didn't get it.
It would have been Yay? It would have been nuclear winter, I guess, in a certain way.
Yes. Anyway, that's my, once again, welcome back to my grand unifying theory of the fact that Freddie Mercury's sad and untimely demise has led us directly to this point in human history. AMA.
And I have no way of proving this, but I think that the French section was something that she did spontaneously. It's possible that she planned it all, but it sounds and feels so spontaneous. Like someone who has that Freddie Mercury style swagger being like, okay, now watch this, bitch. Mm. And I just really love the guts of that.
Yeah, I believe I remember my brother telling me, and he saw her like just playing in basements 20, 25 years ago. I think they overlapped at NYU.
Oh, sure.
Somehow he'd seen her a couple of times, and I think they, I don't know if they like knew each other, they had mutual friends, something. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to 6 degrees myself into the Gaga verse without receipts. But this was, you know, like that she would throw in, like she's playing, she'd throw in like a few bars of Schubert or like, Vanessa Paradis.
Oh, sure. Covers. Why not?
Yeah, because she could. And it's like, who else would A, think that it would be a good idea to like play Je Le Taxi as like a, I don't know, cover, like a mournful folky cover, but also could get away with it? My brother's like, I mean, this is almost terrible, and yet it's really brilliant. I don't know. So I agree. I think that totally tracks. Like, this is somebody who, we were saying in the last episode, like, you know, there are certain things you don't have a grounding in, so you can't necessarily speak to them as well. But I think this is somebody who has just been steeped in all the kinds of pop music, even when you're talking about the 1840s.
Yeah.
So good for her.
And honestly, it's the reason why I will always be interested to see what she does next. Even if I don't love whatever's happening this time, I feel certain that there will be something coming up that I will love. And it's been the case throughout her whole, now at this point, 12-year career, where I haven't loved everything, but she consistently is making things that I want to hear again. And she's very exciting in that
way. And she also, I think, has made a little safe place or like an umbrella for artists who are not quite at that level, but have a similar sort of thing to say about the difficulty of existing as a woman in the world and in pop music, like Kesha, like Alessia Cara, like there are a number of other voices that are sort of like, I don't know, trying to not sneak it in, but trying to bring... trying to repackage pain and sorrow and trauma in a, and just sort of get it to us in different ways that I think even if they aren't direct like descendants of mm-hmm. Lady Gaga, they owe a lot to her ability to do that and make it look like she's just making a club track. So
yeah. Oh, well, what a pleasure to get to talk about this. One last geeky thing I have to say. This is so dumb. So the year that she was nominated for Best Actress and Best Original Song, which of course we talked about, and she won that Oscar for A Star Is Born, was also the year that the movie Roma was nominated for lots of Oscars. And I wondered sometimes if she ever heard at an award ceremony someone say, and the winner is Roma, and then she went, Roma, Roma, ma, Roma, Roma, ma. I want to believe it happened at least once.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, lest we end on too cerebral a note.
Too cerebral. Well, really.
Y'all, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, a.k.a. me, and Sarah D. Bunting. And it's edited by Sarah D. Bunting as well. Do you want to talk to Mark and Sarah about song requests, ads, or birthday readings? Email us at talkaboutsongs@gmail.com, tweet us at TalkSongs, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mastus.podcast. To become a supporter and producer of this podcast, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastus, where you can get access to all kinds of cool bonus content and vote in our ranking episodes. Thanks for listening. This is your life. Don't play hard to get. It's a free world.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.